In last week's U.S. presidential election, President Barack Obama received 50.5% of the popular vote, while Republican candidate Mitt Romney received 48. Underreported by most corporate media organizations is where the rest of the vote went. More than 1.8 million votes went to candidates from other parties, including Gary Johnson of the Libertarian Party and Jill Stein of the Green Party. Joining me now in the studio to discuss the role of smaller parties in U.S. as well as Canadian elections is James Bedham, leader of the Green Party of Manitoba. Welcome, James.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm glad we could have you in. I wanted to start just by talking about the issues in the election. And I followed it somewhat, including the debates between the Republican and Democratic candidates. And I should mention that the other candidates were excluded from the main debates. But one thing that stood out from me is the lack of breadth of issues that were discussed. And I wanted to ask you, from your experience, what have you found that are areas of national or regional interests that are generally ignored unless you do introduce smaller parties into the discussion?
I think there's a whole variety of issues that weren't covered, and it's a really good question that you have, because unfortunately I think you have to tie in the first past the post electoral system, which sort of creates this two-party dichotomy, and then what you don't get is you don't get the whole plurality of different issues and different solutions there. So certainly I think one thing, obviously host of Democracy Now!, as I'm sure many CKUW listeners know, she commented, in none of the debates did any of the candidates really mention climate change. Did they bring up those issues? Even, you know, the thought of the fact that Iran is an enemy and we must, you know, sort of a very sort of militaristic perspective, I think, came from both candidates, where I think if you look at the smaller party candidates, they certainly were arguing other positions that were different in terms of, you know, irrespective of the different candidates' positions on how much more we should spend on the military, there wasn't really a fundamental question of why are we spending this much on the military. So, you know, there's a variety of issues. Certainly at times, President Obama did bring up sort of renewable energy and it was discussed, but I don't think in the same context, it very much became a simplistic debate over, you know, Solyndra and the one bad example when there are a lot of other good examples. And of course, you know, if you're going to get into nascent industry, there is going to be some risk, but there's also a lot of long-term benefits. And I don't think either campaign really put that forward with total force or the same force as you might have seen elsewhere. So I think there's a variety of issues that don't get covered. And I think, you know, we really see it in the States where it's very much a very strong two-party system. But I think we see it also provincially here in Manitoba, where it's very much a two-party system, irrespective of the fact that there are other parties. And I very much respect that. But in terms of the discourse in the two major parties, and I worry also federally in Canada, we're getting the same way in terms of narrowing it down to two choices. And my analogy is that people kind of get a false option then, that you have an option of, you know, Diet Coke and Coke, but no one's offering water, juice, coffee, tea, or something different. So your choice is kind of, it's not much of a choice. You know, you have two apparent stark opposition choices, but they both end up governing much the same way with subtle differences. So I think that's kind of the basis of it. I don't know if that answers your question.
Definitely. In terms of climate change, which you mentioned, what would you like to see discussed, I guess, both in the U.S. and in Canada and here in Manitoba?
Well, I certainly think we need a price on carbon. I tend to think a carbon tax might be a more efficient way of doing it, but cap and trade might be an alternative way of doing it. I think rather than getting lost in the debate of which system's better and which way is better to go is the question of actually putting a price on it. We also need strong international agreements, right, on it. And I mean, I think when we really take a look at Copenhagen, there was a lot of hope with President Obama at the time. And I'm not saying it was entirely his fault, but it wasn't like we got a real strong agreement out of Copenhagen. And now, you know, the next hopes are maybe in 2015 we can build on the Cancun agreement into something that's meaningful. And, you know, we didn't see a lot of discussion of that. So we certainly need strong international agreements. And certainly when it comes to the American president, we need an American president to take a strong leadership on that, given their importance geopolitically. And then we need to talk about pricing carbon. And I think those are probably, you know, two most major policy instruments that I think we could focus on. And then there's a lot of more subtle ones that build into lifestyles, making walkable communities, encouraging more active lifestyles, etc. But I think the two big ones, I would say, would be a pricing carbon and really looking for a strong binding international agreement.
You mentioned the first past the post system and how that creates problems for smaller parties or often for other parties too. What have you found, though, are some of the other challenges for parties that are not, you know, one of the two major or one of the three major parties in running a challenging election campaign?
Well, I think part of the problem is because the biggest problem for the Green Party, because I hear this time and time again, is, well, I really like you guys' voting policy and I'd vote for you, but I don't think you can win. And I'm always stuck thinking, you know, if everyone who said that and everyone who felt that actually went and voted Green, we might win with a landslide, and I'm talking the full government. So that's the hardest part, and it gets to be more difficult on resources. In the past provincial election, we didn't spend, you know, for every dollar the parties were spending, we might have been spending a penny. On the American side of the election, the Green Party, I know, doesn't take corporate donations, right? And certainly the influence of super PACs in the American election, the amount of money that was spent ties in on it. And so I think that is also one of the big challenges. So first you have the credibility challenge that people might believe in you, but they're like, can you really win? And I guess I'd suggest to people, vote with your heart, vote with your conscience. Don't vote like you're trying to bet on the outcome of the election. But then moreover, beyond that, then it becomes an issue of resources. And, you know, it's being able to contact voters multiple times, being able to mail out pamphlets to every door multiple times, that does make a difference. And it's something that we're constantly have to challenge. We have to make do. We have to do more with less resources, which can be a challenge, of course.
I also wanted to ask you about some of the other votes in the U.S., because besides the election of candidates, there were also a number of propositions that were voted on last week. And one of them was on legalization of possession of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And both Colorado and Washington State voted to support legalization of a small amount of marijuana for recreational use. And I know that this is also part of the Green Party's national platform. What work's being done on this in Canada?
Well, certainly in all of our platforms and our budget documents, we've pointed out what this means financially. And so I'll just come back to a point that you started with, which is, I think talking about the legalization of marijuana is the perfect example of why you need multiple parties, that even though polling shows that more than half of Canadians would be in favor of such a measure, and that, you know, 45% of Canadians roughly have at some point in their life consumed marijuana. But yet, at the same time, to get the more major mainstream parties to seriously talk about it is a challenge. Certainly, what the Green Party of Canada has done is, in our budget documents, we've priced in what we think we'd make by legalizing and taxing marijuana as we do alcohol. And I think there's a lot of logic to it. And it also includes measures to make sure we spend on preventative health and to recognize that there is some negative health impacts to that. I've seen some numbers as high, certainly the Green Party budget documents put it lower, but I've seen some numbers as high as saying $8 billion a year in revenue that we could potentially raise in terms of taxing marijuana, not to mention the $1 to $2 billion we spend on trying to enforce the laws. So there's a variety of benefits and a variety of good reasons, even if you don't personally consume marijuana. I mean, people get the conversation topic, people have a tough time talking about, but there's a lot of good policy reasons as to why that makes sense. And I think if you look at the Dutch example, you'll find that through legalization, they've actually had less harder drugs and at lower percentages and at higher ages where the people have ended up trying those harder drugs. So it does seem to have some success that way as well.
And I should probably mention that in Colorado and Washington, although there's a vote to legalize it, it still is illegal in the U.S. So it's not that the U.S. has legalized it in these states.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see the conflict of federal and state laws and how that's going to play out. I don't think anyone really knows yet how that's going to play out.
The other proposition I wanted to ask you about was in California, there was a proposal on labeling genetically modified ingredients in food products. And this was rejected by state voters. It was by a small percentage that it failed. 47% voted in favor. And they were facing, I think, millions of dollars from agribusiness and food companies who wanted to defeat this. What would you like to see done in Manitoba around genetically modified food?
I think we'd certainly like to see the same thing, which is labeling of genetically engineered food. As you said, the amount of money coming from, you know, DuPont, Monsanto, basically big agri companies that have a vested interest in genetically engineered food was astounding and goes back to those comments I made about resources, right? But despite that, I think even though the vote wasn't maybe what a lot of us would like to see, you know, I think that might be a start of something. So certainly if you could get labeling in California, that would likely impact the food industry across North America. Certainly would like to see it in Manitoba. I don't understand why consumers should not be able to at least have the transparency of knowing. And I think just to put it out there, most consumers should know that if you've ever had a can of Coca-Cola or anything like that, chances are there's genetically engineered corn syrup inside of that. So sadly, few of us likely have not at least one point in our life been exposed to it. And, you know, it's unknown what the health impacts would be. There's some studies that point to some risks, and some people are saying it's less clear. But we also need to think broader of the environmental issues. I mean, when you really look at the genetically engineered crops, most of them are really making pesticide-resistant crops. And that's something on the provincial front we've tried to be very active of. We've encouraged the government to try to keep genetically engineered alfalfa out of Manitoba. And, you know, no real response yet, a couple form responses, but nothing in terms of substantive action. But I know that I've talked with even conventional alfalfa producers who fear losing the European market from this product. So it's not even just, and then for organic producers, it could be devastate the industry as it's an important nitrogen fixing portion of their crop rotation. So certainly we think that there needs to be more transparency in terms of labeling. We think we need to try to keep new genetically engineered crops out of, you know, out of wide-scale commercial use until we've really fully investigated them. I also think it's worth noting that in 2008, that was a campaign promise made by President Barack Obama, but it's the difficulty that you get in that two-party system where you may not see actions on issues like that because they're not seen as vote winners, let's say. And I think we have to continue on it. I hope would encourage people to get more informed about genetically engineered foods and the impacts.
Great. Well, thanks so much, James, for coming in today.
No, thank you very much. It's much appreciated. I really enjoyed coming in. Thanks.
I've been speaking with James Bedham. He's the leader of the Green Party of Manitoba, and you can read their platform at greenparty.mb.ca. And you're listening to Mud and Water on CKUW 95.9 FM.